Hi, I'm Josh.
And I'm Lindsay.
And this is the Hideaway Podcast, episode 50.
Cinquante. It's our 50th episode.
So not too much circus news this past week. One thing that I did see come up on my Facebook news feed is that Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York State, officially signed a bill that bans performing elephants in New York. So I assume that means no more Universal Circus coming into town.
Or maybe they still come, but they just do a show without their elephants.
Yes, quite possibly.
And does Cirque Amado Vasquez have elephants?
I don't remember if they have elephants.
I can't remember either, but I feel like they just had
horses
and
dogs.
Oh, just horses and dogs. I don't remember.
I don't remember either. I was actually up by Big Apple Circus, their new site that's up at Lincoln Center. They open next week. And I think they have like 18 horses in their show and a dog act, still with the amazing Jenny Vidbell, who's been their animal trainer for many years.
So what's it like seeing the, you know, a circus tent and all the trailers up at Lincoln Center?
Similar to how it looked in years past. I mean, it was cool. You know, there's something there last year. I was visiting Eric Allen, who's a friend of mine, who's in the Willenda 7-person high wire pyramid. And he showed me around a little bit backstage, saw his trailer, which is really cute. You know, Tim was halfway up when I was there. But the site's got a lot of energy. A lot of people there. Everybody seems very excited for the opening next week. We're going, I think, November 1st on Wednesday.
Yeah.
So we'll let you know what we think after we see it. We're going to have Mark Lonergan on, who was the director of this year's show, to chat with us. So good luck to everybody opening Big Apple. We're excited to come and support you guys.
Eric posts some videos on his Instagram. And his trailer does look really cute. It reminds me of like a dorm room that's so small but so cozy because you've made it your own. It feels like a little den.
I mean, there's definitely something very romantic to like living on the circus back lot in a tiny little trailer.
I was thinking that it must be so loud because it's such a popular area in New York City. And you have like the ballet, the opera, the theater, the library, like, just like the common space.
Nothing loud like a library.
No, but people are going to it. You know, like there's a lot of people.
Yes, there's definitely constantly a ton of foot traffic at Lincoln Center.
So that would drive me insane. Like, how soundproof are trailers?
Probably not soundproof enough for your very sensitive ears, but I think for the average acrobat, probably not too bad.
Well, we're excited to see it. I'm very nervous to see the pyramid, the wire pyramid.
I believe they do have an airbag, though, underneath them. So, it, you know, taking away at least one element of...
It's an interesting creative team, too, for Big Apple this year. It's
a lot of Broadway people.
A lot of Broadway people, but maybe like newer Broadway people have maybe done like one or two things. And then actually their lighting designer is this guy, Jeff Kreuter, who we were working on a project with, who's like incredible.
Did Peter and the Starcatcher. Last season he did The Bandstand. Just a phenomenal lighting designer. I always used to say that tent was like super dark. I don't know if people have been in there remember just how like dimly lit it was in recent years. And I was like, Jeff, am I going to be able to see everything? He's like, this year you can see absolutely everything. There will be no excuse for darkness.
So we are excited.
I also just got back from Montreal where I was shooting a VR scene with Val Doucette. This is, I think, going to be one of the trippier, cooler ones. We shot it in this place called the Palais de Congress.
Explain who Val is.
Well, Val is this amazing contortionist, handstand performer who went to ENC and since has traveled with Circa, that's an Australian group. She was on tour with James Thierry for many years. His show was just at BAM. And she's just this phenomenal performer with an incredible amount of like body control and awareness. I think people are often used to seeing like super Russian-style handstand and contortion acts where everything is perfect, perfect lines. And Val does have perfect lines, but she's also got some crazy weird shapes she can make, weird stuff with her feet and her hands. And we shot it in this really trippy hall that's actually a convention center, but it had a beautiful multicolored wall and then a metal sort of mirror behind it. So we got some super cool kaleidoscopic kind of effects and feeling super excited for people to see it.
Yeah, it's a really awesome video. It's totally different than the other ones that we've filmed so far. So I think people really like it.
Have you seen any shows recently? I know you've been up to the Times Square, little square.
The Broadway box. I saw The Band's Visit.
Now, we saw that the night it opened off-Broadway. What was the difference between the off-Broadway and the Broadway versions?
Well, first, The show is based on a true story about this band from Egypt who has been commissioned by the Egyptian embassy in Israel in a town called Petah Tikva with a P. But because they speak Arabic and not Hebrew, they mess up and they go to Petah Tikva with a B. And the whole story is literally just about that. And it's a true story and it's so good. It's such a good show. And when we saw it off Broadway, it was really good too. But I feel like we were both kind of like, I don't know how it could transfer.
I remember just thinking like, is this story like epic enough? Like,
yeah. It's always interesting watching a show go from an off-Broadway theater where you have little rehearsal time, a smaller budget, and a smaller space, and then transferring to a Broadway house where there's more at stake, there's more money, there's a more rehearsal time, and there's a bigger stage, right? So a bigger set. And how does that show translate to a bigger space? And I honestly think it was better in the bigger space because the story is so small. Having a bigger space makes the story feel bigger.
Interesting.
And, you know, all the music is like Israeli and also Egyptian and really...
Is Tony Shalhoub still in it?
Yes, Tony Shalhoub from Monk. And actually, the day I saw it, there was this little event afterwards for people who are members of Atlantic Theater Company, where the show started. And my parents are members there. So we went, and my mom was like a massive Monk fan. And she was like, I saw her meeting Tony Shalhoub, but I was talking to someone else, so I didn't get to meet him. And I was like, I didn't get to meet Tony Shalhoub. I'm a little sad. She goes, don't worry, I can introduce you on our way out. And I was like, okay, because you've met him for all of 2 seconds. But the main girl who's the main character, and I honestly don't actually know her character's name, she has an amazing Israeli accent. She's so incredible.
It's like her
first thing. Yes, yeah, same actress as Downtown. And she's going to win the Tony Award for Best New Musical Actress.
So just staying on Broadway for a minute, do you think our listeners care if we do a brief humble brag?
No.
Do you know what I'm referencing?
No.
Our upcoming September 2018 Harry Potter tickets you scored.
Oh, yeah. I didn't win. I didn't win anything. I had stuff to pay. But the ticket process for the Harry Potter Broadway show is insane. And I'll summarize it very quickly. Sign up for tickets went live on October 1st. And you had to be a member of Ticketmaster to sign up to be a verified fan to register for an access code that they would send you on October 18th or something. And if you didn't get a code sent to you on October 18th texted to you on October 18th, you then had to wait for the next release of sign up for a verified fan. So basically, if you didn't get an access code, you have to wait till who knows when, because they haven't released another date. And you're supposed to get a text at 10 a.m. So I was like, dang it, I didn't get one. And then 4 p.m. rolls around and I got a text. And so, but by the time it was my turn to go on, there was no availability till September.
When did the show open? Like, it's going to open in March.
So
that 6 month. It's going to get really nice and tight.
Yeah, it'll be great.
Hopefully,
but it was
still
hard
have that
to even
cast.
Find freaking tickets. And then, because I thought I didn't get the access code, so I went back on Ticketmaster to see when they were going to take the next group of signups, and they don't even have a date.
Oh.
So it's a crazy process, but I feel like I won the lotto. We shall see Harry Potter. Well, and then I was like, well, I should get 6 tickets because then, you know, we can
sell to,
or at least have 2 for friends, you know, but I couldn't even get 6. I couldn't even find a day with 6. So I had to go down to 4.
Well, I'm very excited. Good job hunting down those tickets.
Thanks. So I really felt like I was on a mission.
So on today's episode, we're interviewing Olivia Porter, who is an amazing Australian juggler. She was actually in town recently. She performed with us at the Future of Storytelling Festival. Olivia's got a really, really cool style. I recommend you click the description link of this podcast to watch a quick YouTube video of it. But she does a very non-traditional type of ball juggling, using sort of a lot of isolation and a lot of dance references.
She almost looks like she has like a tick when she does, like a purposeful tick, you know, like kind of like she's internally struggling with something, which, and when we had her do her piece at FOST, the audience was just like loving it, just eating it up.
Losing it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what's cool about Olivia is that she's a juggler. And we really haven't had too many jugglers on. It's something I've wanted.
She's a female juggler.
A female juggler, even more rare, but truly. So we talked to her about how she got started in Australia, how she learned to juggle, what she's doing now. She's on the younger side of the spectrum of the people we interview, so she's really at the beginning of her career. I think people will find this super interesting. If you like juggling, you like Australia, you like good stories, this episode is one for you.
One of the things that everyone can take away from this, if you're a performer, and what we've heard from previous performers who have really good like rehearsal discipline, is just being in a studio for hours and hours and just seeing what looks cool. And like what different moves you can do to make it your own. And like, oh, we talk about that with Olivia. So I think it's a really interesting podcast. But before you listen to the interview with Olivia, make sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, tweet us, rate us on iTunes, subscribe on iTunes, or you can email us at hello@hideawaycircus.com. Here's Olivia. Where are you from?
I'm originally... I was born in New South Wales in a tiny little town called Bowen. But I grew up mostly in Brisbane, and I'm now based in Melbourne, but then often here in America.
I feel like, you know, I always forget that Australia, even though it's massive, there's not very many, there's nothing in the middle. Like, really. Everyone lives, like,
in,
like...
Yeah, on all the coastal kind of places. Yeah, I mean, there is a lot inland, but, yeah, more smaller communities. And I've been... Central Australia is so beautiful, like the desert. Right. It's just like so different.
I was like, Josh, we should do a road trip out there. And then I looked at how long it would take. And I was like, an 8-hour drive. Oh, shoot.
And scary. Like, it's just straight. So, like, people get, like, delirious just sort of, you know. Yeah, it's incredible.
Did you grow up, like, were your parents artists? Were you doing arts-related things, performance things as a kid?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. My dad was he was an architect by trade, but he was also a really beautiful painter, did a lot of painting. And my sister really took that kind of route as well, route. And so she's got a PhD in visual arts, and she's an artist as well. But my mum was a social worker, and but I was actually a really sporty kid, and I loved soccer. Soccer was my sport. I was always dreaming of being like
so a... So you were the athlete in school more than you were like the performer?
Yeah, and definitely not very academic. Creative and, sporty was sort of my kind of main avenues. Well,
what was the first like circusy kind of thing that you were exposed to or saw where you were like, oh, that looks cool, like maybe I want to learn some of that?
Yeah, it's I actually find that really hard to remember. I recall being like pulled up in a street show once. I remember the guy like, I'm like, I'm gonna get picked, and he looked right at me and picked me, and I was like, ah. And I remember loving like seeing lots of stuff on the street, even though I never took a, you know, street path. But it was a lot of things on the street. And then in Brisbane, obviously, there was this such a great sort of scene there, and Happy Sideshow was actually one of the first, you know, kind of all sideshow, less circus, but one of the first shows I saw that kind of made me go, oh, that's so cool and amazing, and I'd love to do that.
It's funny, there aren't really, like, I guess there is in Coney Island, but you're this, we interviewed Amy Saunders, do you know who that is? Miss Pia, yeah. Yesterday, and her like initial route into it was also sideshow.
Yeah, okay.
But it's something that's really like not something where you can like easily see it in America.
No, I think you have to be in very specific cities to see sideshow.
Yeah.
So what triggered you like learning skills like juggling or what was that, what came first, juggling?
Yeah, it did. I mean, I was always really fascinated. Actually, I think I learned devil sticks or something. I think I bought them at some markets.
Did you get them with like the flowers on the end or the kind that are like hard and sort of like go out? Like,
I think they were the hard ones. Yeah, with, like the kind of chewy kind of.
Yeah, like ends. The like things on the ends of them.
Yeah.
I had one too. Yes. Nice. Hot pink.
So did you have like all the crazy devil stick tricks? Did you do a little act with that?
No, I never did an act. I was like 12 at the time, and I got them from a market, and I think I only had them for a week, and I got pretty, I think I got, you know, I got good for being 12 and mucking around with them. And then I was staying with a friend's family, and they had this new puppy, and he got to them and chewed them all up. So that was kind of the end of my devil stick career. And I could always sort of juggle in high school. I always picked up the three balls really easily. But I actually had this friend in high school who was, I was probably about 15 at the time, and she was doing circus workshops, which was when circus was rock and roll circus. And I remember saying to her, oh, I really want to do circus. And she turned around to me and she's like, no, you're too old. And I was like, oh.
You're too old at 15.
At 15. So I actually didn't start doing it until I was about 18, 19. Yeah, so I was, you know, I think that's a pretty late bloomer for starting circus.
Yeah, I mean, it can be.
Yeah.
What did you, when, so what, where did you start training when you started?
So so the story into it was I was working at a cafe in West End called Soul Breads, and this woman came in and she was handing out kind of acro flyers for a bunch of workshops, and I was in a really talkative mood that day, and cause usually I was a bit shy with customers, and I ended up talking to her for quite a long time and said that I was really interested in juggling. And she was like, oh, you should do my friend Davey Sanford's workshops at Circa. And so she gave me his details and I contacted him and ended up, yeah, going and doing workshops with him at Circa. So he was my first juggling teacher. And it turned out that the woman who I talked to at the cafe that day was Rocky Stone, who I then ended up like about 5 years later making a company and a show with her. So that was like a...
That's awesome.
Yeah, amazing sort of... around. Yeah, so I started doing workshops with Circa, with Davey mostly, and I started just doing some private workshops with him. Do you guys know Davey Sanford at all?
I don't think so.
He was originally in Briefs. He's
he didn't do it just this past, like, he didn't do Clubbers in Adelaide, did he?
Oh, he may have guessed it.
He had a beard?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. He's a really, he's a beautiful performer. He does a lot of object manipulation. He was in Rock and Roll Circus for a long time. So specialised in juggling, but also amazing clown. He's got some great clowning stuff. He's got a great plate spinning act.
Oh, nice.
It's actually my most favourite act. It's still to date. It's amazing. Do you know the song Total Control? Motels?
Okay.
Anyway, have a little listen to it.
Yeah,
and
I will.
What he does is he's this really quite skinny guy, and he's just sitting there eating dry protein powder to start the act, just sickening. And then he goes into this plate spinning act, and he just puts all the plates up, over time, and the music builds and builds and builds, and then he just walks off stage and just lets them all just fall off slowly and smash.
Oh,
it's amazing.
Nice.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Definitely, I did not see him.
No,
the guy I saw was like, was dropping every second and was not skinny.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Were you attracted to, like, any particular juggling apparatus to start with? Were you like, I really want to learn poi or rings or balls or, like, what? How did your...
Yeah, well, it was always balls. I always loved
loved
playing with balls, all the ball jokes. It was always juggling balls. I did try to do rings and, I did a little bit of clubs. I like passing, but I'm not really much of a club kind of juggler. But, yeah, and I think my style that I sort of developed really just led itself to focusing mostly just on ball juggling, ball manipulation.
How much of you do you feel like your time spent learning skills was based like from a coach versus like self-devised versus like looking at videos on YouTube or on the internet of all these other jugglers and getting like inspiration and references that way?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I feel like when I started like that, compared to now with social media, there wasn't as much access to videos. And I in the beginning I did watch stuff, but then I actually just stopped. Like I hope this doesn't sound awful, but I actually really don't like watching juggling. I get kind of quite like, oh, which is ironic because I do it. But, and a lot of my process, I then started doing workshops with Volcan Women's Circus, so just a community-based circus in Brisbane, doing stuff with them. But, yeah, most of my training then just became independent. I just stand in a room for hours in front of a mirror and play around with, my juggling balls.
To be a juggler, you have to be like dedicated to picking up things your entire life.
Yeah, yeah, and that's
what's like the way to start.
Got a lot of good like foot kicking up tricks where she doesn't have to bend all the
way. Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
So if you're like a talented kicker upper with your foot, you don't have to.
Yeah.
What's like the first thing for someone who can't juggle, where you're like, to learn how to juggle, this is what you should do?
what's the first thing that you should do?
Yeah, because like I've tried 15 times, I can't do it.
Really? I'm sure like, you can. I always go, like, I can teach anyone.
But well, Josh has been my teacher, so maybe he's my teacher. That's
and he's I'm her teacher. That's our relationship is.
But you know how people say like, you know, everyone can sing, and you're like, no. And I wonder if that's maybe the same with juggling, you know? Yeah. Like everyone can juggle, but maybe no. I mean, my favorite is one ball. Like I love playing with the things that you can do just with one ball. And I consider, I mean, it's manipulation. I guess it's not quite juggling, but you know, it's part of the kind of world that I play with. And so I think there's lots of options to do one ball. And
okay, well, I can do that.
And, yeah. And it, like, if you just keep playing with that, it just really comes kind of naturally. Yeah. I think the less you think about it, almost the easier it is.
There's definitely in your style of juggling, sort of like you said, a lot of manipulation, but also sort of like a kind of dance element to it. Mm. And there's something that, repetitive wouldn't be the right word, but it's sort of like a self-contained series of movements that you like call back a little bit and like reference throughout the number. And I'm just wondering, like, where did you see somebody else do that style of juggling? Because it's not like that flashy, like, you know, very traditional style. It's much more contemporary and... I don't know if it's influenced by dance or influenced by something else, but, you know, how did that identity sort of come to be?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Like, and I feel like a lot of people ask that question. And I, you know, I think there was definitely performers that I watched that I would have been inspired by. And I actually think there were a lot of local Brisbane artists that once I started doing circus and going and seeing shows around the area, it really came from that environment, I felt like. And you know, circus in Brisbane, especially at that time, I don't know now because I haven't been there for so long, just had this really supportive environment. And so my kind of process and how it sort of led to me, I mean, obviously I use my feet a lot from my juggling kind of background. So a lot of that kind of, you know, people say hacky sack. I'm like, it's not hacky sack. I actually really suck at hacky sack. So you keep it up, and that's, you know, right. Stalls I can do, but yeah, I can't keep it up. You know, so that, I guess, you know, the soccer playing was a big part of it. But, you know, for me, circus became, I like to really approach it in a more theatrical kind of way. And so whenever I tried to make an act, it was about telling a story, you know, even if the audience didn't get what that story is, that's kind of how I would like to try and create things. And the first act I ever created, you know, was nothing special, you know, very unique, but it was like this wind-up doll. And so I really worked hard on making all the movements really kind of staccato, and for like the ball to always be the reason that, you know, a certain part of my body was moving. Oh, cool. Or things like that. And, you know, that was that's, I think, where that kind of style started. And just over the years, I've really sort of developed that. Like, I never had a dance background. Lots of people would ask if I was a dancer. And I loved watching, like...
It's just all that soccer training really helped the staccato movement. Yeah. What took you out of Brisbane? Like, what started your world touring?
4 years ago, I left Brisbane, so not actually that long ago. I'd made a show, Fright or Flight, with Rocky Stone, who's a Melbourne-based, who is a Melbourne-based circus artist, and Bianca McHale, who's a Brisbane-based artist, and we made a show, Fright or Flight, and that kind of, we ended up winning the Circus and Physical Theatre Award at Adelaide Fringe.
Congrats.
It was amazing. Like, we did 5 shows, and like, the first 4 nights, only like we had 10 people in the audience or something. And then the last night, it sort of built a bit over the 5 shows, but the last night we had a full house, and that was amazing. And yeah, it got really well received. And then, so then we took that to Edinburgh. So I think prior to going to Edinburgh, I sort of packed up my house and was like, I'm just going to see what happens. And yeah. And then I ended up moving to Melbourne for a little while, and then I ended up joining Circus Ops. And so yeah, that kind of landed me in basing myself in Melbourne for a while.
When you tell people in America what Circus Oz is and sort of like what that company, the history of that, not maybe the history, but just a flavor of that company.
Yeah.
The whole history of that.
Yeah, I always feel so embarrassed because I've worked for them for so long, on and off, for 2.5 years. But I mean, Circus Oz was such a pioneering company, I think, for the international circus scene, from my understanding. I know that they had certain influences on Cirque du Soleil and other companies at the time, and you know, very political, and yeah, they were just such incredible company, and they still are. I think I joined when they just got the new building. So they have this incredible custom design building in the middle of Collingwood, in this really, you know, funky area of Melbourne, close to town. prior to that, they were out in Port Melbourne in this sort of old, it was called the Sausage Factory because it used to be a sausage factory. So, yeah, and they had Mike Finch as the artistic director, and he was there for about, he ended up being there for about 16 years. So I think, like, you know, and he's fantastic, and he's such an amazing, amazing man, amazing director, and, you know, he's a good friend of mine. But, you know, I think it just sort of, it just got tired, and, you know, over the last sort of little while, like maybe last 6 years, yeah, the response to Circus Oz kind of, you know, that sort of, wanting to sound harsh, you know, just died off, and I feel like the shows weren't quite as strong as maybe they used to be, or, you know, I think, which is a natural probably cycle for a company that's been kind of going for
30, 40 years.
Yeah, you know, and so then Mike stepped away. He resigned while I was there, and they had a year of sort of, you know, they searched for a new artistic director, and they really wanted to bring someone, you know, kind of quite external from the Australian world to bring in something kind of new and fresh and exciting. And that ended up being Rob Tanyan, who, yeah, I got to work with Model Citizens, who's such an amazing, amazing man. And it's a really big job. Like, it's such a, you don't realize what a big company it is and like how many different elements there are to it. And yeah, so, you know, I think it's, and now I feel like it's taking a new kind of form, but it's still very ingrained in the old Circus Oz. So it's, yeah, it's going through this interesting transition at the moment.
Did you tour around the Australia with that show, or where?
Yeah, so I originally started with the show But Wait, There's More, and we did, yeah, Australia.
The show is called But Wait, There's More.
Yeah, yeah, so that was Mike's last show that he did with Circus Oz.
It's a great title for, like, you're going out.
Yeah, But Wait, There's More. Yeah. You know, that was a really fun show. We took it, yeah, regionally throughout Australia, and then we did bring it here to...
The New Vic, is that where they played?
No, we didn't do the New Vic. Circus Oz have, prior years they'd done the New Vic, but not this show. We did Illinois and, gosh, I can't remember, and smaller kind of university towns, more regional America, and then we did a season in Tohu, which was really challenging.
Why was the Tohu challenging? Tohu was a big circus theater in Montreal.
I know, you know, it's so beautiful and I loved it. We had a couple of quite major injuries, and so the show ended up changing quite a lot. And then we were sort of working in the pros, and then had to take it to the round really suddenly. And it was just, unfortunately, it just, yeah, wasn't at its strongest. And yeah, we didn't get so well received there, unfortunately. But gosh, yeah, it was so fun working there. Like, I love that theater so much. Yeah. I'd love to.
It's a really cool space.
Yeah.
We saw a few things there. And
it's cool how they can reconfigure it depending on what you see. Did you play in the round while you were there, or did they set it up so that it's like proscenium style?
It was more in the round, but yeah.
That's hard to go from a proscenium style show and then all of a sudden you're in the round.
Yeah, those transitions are just so different. They take so much, yeah.
I always have a, like, you know, I think if you're doing a show in the round, you, like, make the show to be in the round.
Yeah, it is. Because Circus Oz, our Melbourne season, we're in our big top, and that's in the round. And so, and that's another change that the company's kind of made since taking on new direction, is usually you'd always start a new show with the Melbourne season, so you would build it in the round, and then you take it on into the theatres on the regional tours and change it into the pros. But yeah, this time we went the other way. Yeah, and it is
hard.
Yeah, we're like, oh no, it'll be easy, and then once you get on the floor, you're just like, oh my gosh, and like just getting from back, you know, into centre stage is just like takes 3 or 4 times as long.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice. So now you've been coming to America quite a bit at least last year and a half since maybe I met you.
Yeah.
What prompted sort of your travels in the U.S. aside from the Circus Oz tour?
Yeah, because that was my first time to America, and I
your first
it.
Time to America was where Illinois?
Seattle was our first stop. I did. I loved Seattle.
Seattle's beautiful.
And then I did all this one, but I loved it. I loved being in all this. But that's what's so interesting with circus. You get to go to such unusual places that you would never go, you know, and discover really interesting people, you know, you get to work with. So I came last year, early last year, I actually did a little tour with my friend's company, Stompy, who runs Dot Comedy, and he does like an interactive kind of festival show called The Maze.
Mm.
And that's not so much circus based, that's more, yeah, theater. And so I was this kind of crazy witch lady. I made a lot of children cry actually that season. I had this like amazing smoke machine in front of me, and you know, they'd be walking down this tiny little aisle and then sort of the smoke would disappear and there I was just looking terrifying. I'd be like, ah, run away. So we did that in Virginia and then Ottawa, and then I got I applied for some funding from the Australian Arts to do a little residency here. And so Tanya Gagne is a good friend of mine who runs Big Sky. And so I sort of teed up with her, and I'd met Spencer.
Novak, right?
Yeah, Novak.
Literally every time I say it, I've known him for so long, and every time I say his last name, I'm always like, I said Novak or Novich, Novak.
I think I used to always say Novich. I was like, whoops, Novich. Yeah, because we met just as I was finishing up with Circus Oz. That's funny. We met on Tinder.
Really?
Yeah. I was just looking at his photos, and I was like, wow, this guy looks really interesting. And but then we only got in touch because, like, we suddenly realized we had heaps of mutual friends, and then we just saw each other perform. Like, I really like your stuff. And I was like, I really like your stuff. Like,
Tinder, setting up juggling partners, clowning partners every day.
Yeah, that's very funny. It was never romantic at all. But
we should use that for artistic collaboration more.
Be like, Tinder.
Tinder.
We are looking for someone with a sense of humor,
acrobatic skills,
great at ball juggling.
So yeah, I got a little bit of funding to just develop new work. It was just a professional development grant, so it didn't have to have a particular outcome, but just to sort of, yeah, and that was really fun. I did that.
So you can get grants in Australia to travel to the US to be professionally developed?
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet. Was that hard to get? Is it just an application process? What is that like?
Yeah, it wasn't too difficult, like a general sort of grant application that sort of asked, you know, I didn't ask for too much money. I think, you know, obviously the more money you ask for, the kind of more in depth it gets, but it was purely I just sort of had mentioned that I had met Spencer and was really interested in developing work, some material with him. And it was not too hard, actually. I was in a good position. I just finished with Circus Oz, so that's, you know, obviously
a well-recognized
company there. Yeah.
So what were your impressions? You land in the States, you come to New York eventually at some point where we meet you. What was, like, you know, your impression of American circus and, like, theater and the scene? Like, what struck you about it when you arrived? Was it good or bad or different or weird? I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely different. And, you know, I feel like, I don't know if maybe I'm missing something, but I just feel like, American circus is actually quite different to Australian circus, and it seems very, like, less prevalent than...
It's definitely less prevalent, and I would totally agree that it's pretty, pretty different.
Yeah.
What struck you that was different about it?
I think just, like, you know, I think it's, you know, again, it's hard to say because I was sort of, you know, seeing little cabarets and stuff. I felt like the quality was...
Lower?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you can say it. Well, I think there's, like, a lot of recreational circus in America, almost more than professional circus, which leads itself to, like, a lot of people who can do, and this is not bad, but it sounds bad, but, like, can do mediocre tricks, and then they can put an act together.
I'm going to say low-skill tricks.
Okay. Less bitchy.
Yeah. low-skill tricks. But, yeah, no, I think it was also, like, me just being shocked, like, paying $20 for seeing a show that I thought was very kind of community-based. And I think I just felt like people that sort of weren't in the circus community, like, that were just audience members, you know, they didn't, like, they loved it. And that's totally fair enough. And so I think that's fine. But I was just a bit like, whoa, like, to me, that's more of a community kind of level show. But at the same time, it's, I think it's just, what kind of show
is the problem. Everyone, like, trains... All of these Americans leave, train elsewhere, and then do shows elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm just sort of,
except for you. You were like, I'm going to come to America. That's where it's at.
Yeah, well, then I fell in love was the problem.
Right, so now you're stuck here.
So, and you've been creating shows of your own, right, since, you mentioned a few of them, but, are you working on generating a new act, a new show? Sort of where's your mind these days? Or do you want to, like, run off with a specific company?
Yeah, I don't, like I said before, we started, I'm feeling like, not in a fork in the road, but not too sure where I want to go right now. And it's always that balance of like, how can I, you know, survive? And I feel like there's this pressure of taking certain contracts to do work that I'm actually not feeling passionate about. And so I actually just refused a contract because I was like, no, I want to make work that I feel really passionate and excited about and I feel really proud of. So yeah, right now I'm after I leave here, I go back to Melbourne. And I'm making a little 45-minute show with a friend of mine, Jared Dewey, who I worked with at Circus Oz. He's a beautiful contortion trapeze acrobat. He worked with the Circa for a really long time. So we're making a show that's sort of based around an earlier kind of development that I've done about a ghost. I dress up in like a sheet with two eye holes and just do lots of stupid clowning stuff and then obviously do some juggling stuff. So yeah, that's what I'm sort of working on here at the moment. I'm just playing around in I train at Triskelion Arts. Sometimes I use their studios and then when I'm out in Pennsylvania I train on the deck. But I also found a really great little studio that I work in too. So yeah, I'm really focused now on just generating some new material.
What's your process for that new material? Like if I was to just like be a fly on the wall, like what would I see you do? Like, how does
so
that
stupid stuff? I do some silly stuff. I sometimes watch videos back. I'm like, what are you doing?
So do you record all of your sessions where you're training to figure out new material? How does that work?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes I will. Sometimes I won't. I really wish I could explain my process, but it's so difficult. I mean, I feel like there's days where I just sit on the floor with a pen and paper in front of me and like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. And then other days I just, you know, I love like silly novelty props. Like I go to novelty stores and get like just ridiculous stuff and just surround myself in it and put myself in a room in front of the mirror and just play around. So that's kind of a bit of an inspiration of mine. Music is obviously a big one. Like I'll try find some tracks that kind of really get me going. And yeah, especially when I'm devising juggling stuff, it's a lot of like every single movement I do, I try and break down and find, you know, different ways of doing it. So I feel like I can sit on like maybe 5 seconds of my act for like a week, I reckon. Sometimes like just get really obsessed with, you know, what's the best option there and what's the most interesting. Yeah, but I don't know if I was to try and describe like a general day in the studio, you know, I do a lot of conditioning and I do love doing like handstands just for mostly general fitness and I know handstands are just addictive.
Oh, God. Another thing I don't know how to do.
Are you addicted to handstands?
So addicted. Juggling and handstands, man.
I think juggling can definitely be very addictive once you get the ball rolling.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was terrible. Once you get the dental sticks rolling.
Your process also really sounds like a lot like a choreographer.
Yeah.
You know, like really dissecting like each little sound and movement and like what is the like placement of the hand and which I think is what sets when I saw your act versus, you know, another juggler. Like juggling can feel really fluid. Mm. And what I love about your style is like it can feel very like angular.
Yeah, I love angles. I'm pretty obsessed with angles.
Which is really cool because, you know, even like the ball being thrown up and down is like this like, you know, kind of fluid arc.
Yeah.
And so, like, having that juxtaposed with, like, really sharp moments is really cool.
Yeah, and that's what I'm really trying to find. I'm also really trying to find, like, light and shade in that. I feel like a lot of my stuff is very, like, duk, 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 duk. And so I'm trying to, like, I find it really hard to go slow. I'm, like, really trying to find some slow kind of rhythm in it. But, yeah, and I have so much fun with trying to play with, you know, I think how the audience view, like, I actually often feel like the audience don't follow the balls. They'll follow my, like, because, you know, the ball will sort of be over here on... you know, on this side or and I'll be doing something with my leg on that side, on the left side, you know. And so, yeah, people are just kind of trying to create more of a bigger picture than focusing on the skill itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, it's really amazing. I think the juggling how you can just see people. This is a very common. I don't know how common it is. I've only seen a handful of people do it, but super easy. Where you basically go from a 3-ball cascade to a 2-ball, or it's 2 balls in one hand, but actually you're just holding an extra ball in that hand, and you've made that third ball look like you've eaten it.
Yeah,
and just like
I was like, how did he do that? I'm that audience member that's like, whoa.
And it's got a bit of like that like magic vibe to like that you can really control where people are looking. But on the flip side, what is your sort of like philosophy on dropping? Because I think like people who some styles of act where they take it like super contemporary and super serious and super dark doesn't like necessarily allow for like humor, you know, when you drop or like a way to cover that. So how have you sort of like tackled, not that your acts are super serious, but how do you sort of like tackle that as a performer?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I feel like a lot of the feedback I get is, it doesn't matter when you drop Olivia, like it's hard to even tell, or, you know, like you just go on. But I actually get so anxious. I get so obsessed about like getting the trick right, but I so often don't. Like, I'm a really nervous performer, and I could say like, I think I've only ever done one or two completely clean routines in my whole entire life. Like, I always drop, and that's just the reality of it. But it still like makes me panic. But it's also like, yeah, dropping is a really, it's actually can offer you a lot, opposed to, you know, getting it really perfect.
What do you mean it can offer you a lot?
You know, just I think to me, like when I'm practicing, I try and find like when I do drop, instead of like stopping and, you know, do that again, you know, try find ways of like moving to the ball or different ways of picking it up, or, you know, just ways to continue on so it almost looks like it was meant to happen. I also do love to play with like I put purposeful like throw downs or, you know, hit outs or certain purposeful drops that kind of make the audience go, oh, was that meant to be on purpose or not? And so then it kind of covers you for later when you do drop.
When you do drop, like, that was meant to happen.
Kind of blur. I try and blur the lines a little bit there. Yeah.
This is going to be like, we're getting into like a little bit of the idiosyncrasies of juggling. So hopefully some people in the audience like that. But when you're sort of structuring a number, and you're sort of thinking about like the order of tricks, are you thinking about like level of difficulty for like people who know what you're doing, like how difficult it is and how you're ordering it? Or are you really thinking like you're designing it for an audience who's pretty uneducated and it's more about like what visually looks super interesting, and maybe the hardest trick is first and something pretty easy is what you use as your finale, like that kind of balance?
Yeah. I usually go for image is always sort of like, so more or less than the skill itself. But, you know, I actually think the hardest tricks I do, people don't realize
they're hard.
I do a lot of like, I love doing blind kind of stuff, so covering my eyes and doing catches and things like that, playing with that sort of stuff. Yeah, I love to use, but people don't, you know, I just don't think people, general GP kind of audiences, yeah, realize. So I used to kind of be like, I'll put the hardest trick first, or I'll put that trick first. But I feel like I just kind of don't know what people think are hard and what's not. And clearly, like, I've got a couple of sort of, I think I've sort of become more signature tricks and foot kind of manipulation tricks that I do always sort of pump out at the end, because I know that always gets a good response. So yeah, I do have sort of certain skills that I know an audience will respond to. But then for me, I personally like, yeah, I like to just structure an act for its aesthetics more than its this, you know, spectacle of the skill.
And do you make your own juggling props, or do you buy them from somebody?
Buy them.
You can make your own juggling balls.
You can. I mean, maybe not super well, but people do.
I'm probably like the general listener to our podcast. Like, oh wow, how do you do that?
Yeah, you can. I think it was one time with I don't know, maybe Jacob Sharp or Brooke Kennison. We went and bought the balls you put in like little kids,
like ball pits,
like ball pit balls. Yeah, and then you can cut those open and you can put sand or like whatever the material is, and then seal those, and then all of a sudden you have like juggling balls you've made for like less than $10 and like, you know, 50 of them or whatever.
Wow.
But
a lot of effort.
So yeah. Who makes the equipment that you use?
I use G-balls now, which I only started using. I'm going to make all the ice out of the microphone. I already feel like I'm doing that now. Yeah, G-balls. I started using them. I had a stage manager find them for me at Circus Oz because I was dropping them so high off the rig that the ones that I'd been using were just sort of splitting because the pressure was so much, and found these G-balls, which are the 8-panel balls, and yeah, they're just really strong. And
something said 8-pound balls.
Yeah, 8 panels.
Oh, 8 panels.
Oh, 8 panels. I was like, oh, so ball is 8 pounds? Girls of like 10.
It's a workout ball. I juggle. Yeah. You can't see it, but Olivia is ripped.
She has the biggest biceps. 8 panels. Okay.
8 panels. Sorry. That's me mumbling.
I was like, wait, is this another thing I'm an idiot about? Like, why are they really 8 panels? They look so light. Oh, God. Okay, so 8 panels, they don't split.
They don't split, and they also just kind of retain their shape a bit better. So all that foot kind of stalls and stuff just make it a bit easier.
Nice.
It's been my nerdy juggling talk.
No, I like the nerdy juggling talk. Awesome. Well, I think we're at the point in our podcast where we ask our famous last three questions. I don't know if they're famous. They're famous for the listeners.
Everyone knows them.
Has there been a piece of advice, good or bad, that somebody has given you in your life that has really stuck with you?
Oh, gosh. I just feel like I've had so many bad pieces of advice. Like, in terms of performing,
Yeah, what's a bad piece of performing advice you've been given?
I don't know, just bad.
You know what someone told me once? They were like, when you're performing, you are not allowed. If you have an itch, do not itch it. You have to have your hands by your side all the time. And when I got to college, they were like, why do you look like a robot on stage? Because like, I would never like itchy. Itch my... I was like, I'm just so itchy. They're like, you can't. And they're like, you have to look like a real person.
Wow.
That's what I like about circus. Because everyone, like, if something's off, like, they fix it. Like, theater, it's like...
Yeah, yeah.
And I was trying to, like, spur
really dumb, like, performance note, somebody said something to you where you were like, that's throwing that one out the window. Or, like, you maybe your first coach said something to you that, like, really inspired you to, like, keep going or, you know.
Yeah. I had quite a few directors tell me to smile more on stage. And I was like, oh, I don't want to smile.
I'm
serious. The hardest thing I found with, maybe this is going a bit of a tangent, it's probably not really answering the question, but the hardest thing I've really struggled with my performing career, and especially joining professional companies, working with certain directors, I actually never get notes.
Whoa.
It's, you know, I actually find that super frustrating. Like, yeah, because I think, especially when it comes to my juggling, people just don't really know how to dissect it all. Mm. Yeah, and so I've often, like, that's been a real, like...
frustration.
Yeah, you know, whether it's positive or negative or, yeah, I just
that's
often...
That's why your only note is smile.
Yeah, smile. You know, there'd be, like, yeah, maybe... oh, that wasn't a very good 5-ball, you know, or you did a few drops, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, in terms of trying to, like, yeah, dissect my work, it's...
Yeah, but that's frustrating because there probably aren't that many people who are, like, jugglers who also direct or who, you know, yeah. who can really get into it with you about, you know,
yeah.
making it nuanced for that particular performance. It's probably quite a lot.
Do you ever get directors, though, that are like, can you, when you catch that ball, can you, like...
Make
this shape or like, you know, yeah, do X. Like,
yeah.
Do they ever dissect it like that?
Not often, no. Like, and I don't mean to, like, it's definitely not about the directors I've worked for, because I have worked with some really fantastic directors. Yeah, I feel like it's just more of a struggle in a general sort of, and you know, often with those bigger shows, there's sort of certain focuses that, and then kind of.
Great, you juggle.
Often the actual act is the least thing that's changed.
Yeah, least of their concerns for whatever reason.
Right.
It's never enough time.
Right. Smile.
Smile, use the space.
Yeah.
Awesome. So the second question is...
I didn't really answer that first.
No, there's a lot. I can edit that into a really clean answer.
Okay.
I was just like, oh, I can make this really sound really clean.
I hope these don't get harder.
So here's another challenging one for you. Has there been, or so often a lot of our listeners are people who are getting into circus or who are young and training and sort of want to expose themselves to different stuff. Is there a book or a movie or a TV show or any kind of like artistic reference that you like a lot that you would recommend to somebody who's getting into circus that they should see or Google or listen to?
I'm sure there is a lot of like certain materials and things, but I feel like... you know, for my journey into the circus world, it was because I felt like I created something quite unique and unseen before that really shot me into the performing world, like, really quickly, and that kind of got me to where I got. So I think it's really important that people find reference that really appeals to their, you know, their own interest and, you know, whether it's, you know, you love dinosaurs but you love to do trapeze, like, and you find that kind of connection somehow. Yeah, I think, yeah, with social media now, I feel like there's quite a lot of mimicking and searching for, you know, and I think it's really important, of course, to draw inspirations from people, but then I also often worry that people just really try and be that, you know, one particular artist that, you know, they look up to. And yeah, I think it's just really important to kind of like diversify your options and think about how you can turn an apparatus into it being really your own thing. Yeah. Again, another good. Really abstract answer.
That's okay. It's good. I was thinking about that. I was like, yeah, that's a really good answer. Last question. Okay. Who do you think we should have on the podcast?
Ooh. Like, if I kind of think about people that have really inspired me in the world of circus, like, I would recommend Fez Banana from Briefs.
From Briefs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you know, he's a busy man, so he might be hard.
He's not doing much, though.
No, never. But, yeah, he's got such an interesting, such a interesting history of, like, how he sort of, I mean, he comes from a dance background. But, you know, he's such a, like, he really supported me when I first started doing circus, and he saw what I was doing. He's like, always encouraged me, him and Mark both. And, I just think what he's doing is really great, really political and strong and, you know, always really pushing to make new work. Like, they've just made their third brief show that's, you know, really quite different from their last one. So it's obviously...
Encounters, is that what it's called?
Close Encounters.
Close Encounters. It's like, yeah. It's not Brief Encounters, but it's Close Encounters.
It's a really short show.
Yeah. You know, Davey Sanford, my juggling teacher. Yeah. My original juggling teacher. He's also a great person to try and hook up with. He's very funny and very interesting.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for talking to
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having me.
And take so awesome that show. Little 15-year-old girl who told you you were too old for circus. Let's not look at you. And that was our interview with Olivia Porter.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please like us on Facebook, Twitter, tweet us, like us on Instagram, subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us on iTunes, share the podcast with a friend, with family, with your mom. Have a wonderful, happy Halloween.
And dress up as something fun.
Have a good week.